So our role is to develop assessments and interventions for all our extremist convicted offenders, as well as those who are what we term as of concern in terms of being radicalized within prison and within the community, those offenders who are also on probation but are at risk of becoming radicalized. So we work in partnership with the Home Office and the Ministry of Justice, although Her Majesty's Prison and Probation Service is an independent arm that carries out those roles of looking after the Prison Probation Service for the government.
Ready.
So, just a brief introduction is what do we actually know about extremism and the journey into extremism? So we know that there is no single explanation as to why people become involved in extremism. Profiles of why individuals take the journey and become involved and offend are different for everybody. We know that the psychological processes involved in radicalisation are similar across all the forms of extremism. So the same journey whereby an individual begins to engage, make commitments to a group, a cause, or an ideology is the same, regardless of whether it's right-wing extremism, Islamic extremism, for example. So we also know that many of the processes by which someone becomes involved in extremism are not abnormal processes. We all seek belonging in our lives, we all seek recognition, self-worth. These are the same processes that extremists undergo, however they go about it in the wrong way and end up identifying with problematic groups and causes. We know that individuals disengage through the same process by which they engage in extremism, so people radicalise in the same way that they de-radicalise, by making increased commitments to a group in the same way we try and facilitate them to take steps away from a group, away from associations. We know that identity is key to understanding why people become radicalised and also why they de-radicalise. In terms of a theory underpinning it, we look at both the personal and contextual factors. So that's what makes this type of offending slightly unique, is that it's not only about personal attributes or factors, it's also about the social and political context in which people function. And in terms of facilitating desistance and de-radicalisation, we know that reflection, creating doubt, exploring doubt, reviewing commitments, looking at positive ways in which people can fulfil those identity needs is what works to facilitate de-radicalisation. And we also know that changing ideology or dealing with ideology alone does not result in de-radicalisation. So, briefly, we have two forms of assessment in the UK. We have the extremism risk guidelines. This is the extremist guidelines that we use, or the assessment that we use with all individuals who have been convicted of a terrorist offence or of a terrorist-related offence. So, for example, in the UK, the two individuals who killed Lee Rigby, soldier, those two individuals were not convicted of terrorist offences. They were convicted of murder, but we know that they are linked to terrorism. So we talk a lot about terrorist offences and terrorist-related offences. We also do the ERG on individuals who are of serious concern, so that we are very concerned that they are criminalised. It is undertaken by psychologists and probation officers within prison and probation. The ERG is completed on all terrorist offenders or terrorist-related offenders within 12 months of being sentenced. And as I said, it can be completed both in prison and also in community probation. We also have a thing called the extremist risk screening. So this is for people who are at risk of becoming radicalised. It's for those who potentially only intelligence exists. So in some cases in prison, we have individuals for whom only intelligence exists. We don't have overt information that they are becoming radicalised. So for those individuals, we use the ERS. And again, these are completed by counter-terrorism units within prison and probation. They can be done at any time, whenever a risk factors, for example, like political and moral motivation. They are things like need for identity, meaning and belonging. Those are the types of factors that make up those 22 factors. We also consider protective factors, and I think that that's one of the differences between the VERA and the ERG, is that the VERA makes it quite explicit that they deal with protective factors as a big part of their assessment, whereas we consider all our factors in both the risk and protective kind of dimension. We group our factors into three dimensions, that is engagement, intent, and capability. Engagement are factors that account for a person's commitment, associations, their motivations for becoming involved in extremism. Whereas intent is about the willingness and the readiness that someone is at a point that they are able to commit an offence against life. And capability is pretty much what it says on the box. That is the capacity or an individual's ability to carry out a terrorist offence. So the ERG is a couple of things in relation to the ERG is that some people may engage, so they may become involved with the extremist group, but they may be unwilling to cause harm, so they engage but they have no intent. We also acknowledge that some people may be engaged, but they truly don't identify with a group cause or ideology. And I'll come on to this a little bit and explain this quite a subtle distinction, but an important one. And some people will be willing to commit an offence, they will have intent, but they won't have the capability, so they won't have the resources, the networks, for example. The ERG is a structured professional judgment assessment. It is a needs analysis as much as it is a risk management assessment. So it looks at what people's needs are in order for them to disengage and to de-radicalise, as much as it is part of looking at risk management. It says that it's intended to inform risk management and inform a multidisciplinary decision-making process. So it is not to be used in isolation, and it certainly does not predict future offending. I mean, I pretty much covered this. So it assesses the extent to which an individual is engaged, intent, and capable of committing a future extremist offence. It is used to inform judgments about an individual's likelihood of contributing to a future extremist offence. And it informs, importantly, sentence planning, intervention, and risk management. And that is what it was designed to do. The background is that it was designed in 2009-2010. We did look at the VERA when we were designing the ERG, however, a lot of our offences are not violent. A lot of our offences are preparatory in nature. And for a number of reasons, we decided that the VERA at the time did not adequately deal with the population that we had or the context in which we were dealing with extremism. And that is why at the time we decided to go forward with the ERG development. So an independent process evaluation was undertaken on the ERG in 2010, and it was rolled out as it is today, September 2011. It's currently being reviewed. We're hoping that we will have our first publication towards the end of this year, and that will be on validity, which has all been positive findings. Shows construct validity, shows space validity. The publication early next year will be looking at the reliability. So the reliability is inter-rater reliability for the researchers in the room. We are unlikely to ever get predictive work at this stage. Maybe in 10 years, 15 years, we might be lucky enough to look at the predictive validity of tools like the ERG and VERA. So I mentioned a couple of slides ago the engagement and identification, but some people may be engaged but not identified. So this is becoming an important distinction which has really been highlighted in the prison service over the last few years. That people become engaged in a group or a cause, but they actually don't identify with the ideology of that group or that cause. They use an extremist group cause as basically a justification or an opportunity for which they can commit crime. So this is a big distinction, and this is a problem particularly in prison, where people are becoming radicalized. not because they're becoming extremists, but because they have violent pasts. They need an excuse, effectively, to commit further offences, and engagement in extremism provides them that justification. So we say that, it's logical, really, but the more someone identifies with a group, or the more they become identified or defined where they are by a group cause or ideology, the more likely they are to act in ways that are illegal, that are harmful. But we do acknowledge, as I've said, that those that are engaged aren't necessarily identified. And it's important because whether they're engaged or whether they're identified defines how we deal with them and how we rehabilitate them. So we have found through research and through our case studies with our extremists that generally there's two pathways into extremism. There's the non-criminal pathway, which is the one that John Morgan, for example, talks about when he talks about being socialized into extremism. This is where an individual engages, they make increasing commitments to a group cause or ideology, and while they're doing that, their intent develops. They start to become ready, they start to become willing to commit an offence. Their inhibitions against violence and causing harm are overcome, and they either have some capability or they certainly start to develop capability through networking, through access to resources, and then they commit an extremist offence. The other pathway is the criminal pathway, which kind of touches on the identification engagement distinction that I made. But here we have individuals who start with capability. These are individuals who have criminal histories, they've already committed violence, they already have intent, they already have attitudes that justify offending, they already have that willingness and readiness to commit an offence. As I said, all they need is a justification or an opportunity to commit further offences. And so the engagement is the last step before committing an offence. So these are our general refinding of the two pathways that we have into extremism. Right, so moving on to the extremism risk screening. So as I said, this is for individuals who are at risk of becoming radicalised. It is designed to assist frontline prison and probation officers to assess information about an individual and their vulnerability or their risk. It was reviewed in 2014, and now it considers five rather than the three dimensions that we have in the ERG. So as well as engagement, intent, and capability, it also now considers the dimensions identification, which I've talked about, and context. And when I talk about context, that's really the environment. People finding themselves within a prison environment, which can be very daunting, can have a lot of changes for an individual. And also talking about that includes mental health and issues like that in context. It's important to note that the ERS is not a risk assessment. It is an assessment to help people assess information about whether someone is vulnerable or at risk of becoming radicalised. And from there, then decisions are made about whether an ERG is required, whether an ERG isn't required, but perhaps something one-to-one work with an imam is required. So, as I also mentioned, that sometimes we have intelligence alone by which we have concerns, particularly in prison, and so these can be non-disclosable, whereas the ERG is a disclosable document legally. This can be non-disclosable because someone could be harmed from disclosure of information, prison staff, other prisoners, so we need to protect those individuals if that is how information has come to our notice. Okay, so just right, so onto our intervention. This is really a whistle-stop tour of what we do, and quite simplistic. So we have two interventions. These are both psychosocial-based interventions. One is the healthy identity intervention and developing dialogues. So the HII was designed for terrorist offenders, and it was designed for those who have an ERG completed on them. So it's quite a high-intensity program. It can take 3 to 4 months within the prison and up to a year within the community to complete with an individual. Prison Probation Service and it was rolled out across our services in 2011. So, key features of it, they target the social and psychological drivers of extremist offending. They are used with offenders convicted of all forms of extremism. It's a one-to-one program. It's delivered by psychologists and probation officers. And it addresses, as I've talked about, the non-criminal pathway drivers into offending. So it is not designed to deal with criminal pathway offenders. Breaking down at the bottom of this page, I've just covered the aims of the program, which I might go into now, but they are there if you do want to look through. Other key features is really that they have, what an important aspect of extremist offending is, I've said, is identity. So one of the main focuses within the program is on identity. Identity and issues associated around vulnerabilities to identity have been found to be important in explaining why individuals get involved and also why they move away from extremist offending. So it's important because Horgan's description of the life cycle of extremism includes becoming an extremist, being an extremist, and exiting extremism, both very fundamental to identity. Burrell, in 2015, did some research on 22 extremists, and she found that it was changes to social and personal identity that accounted for why individuals left extremism behind them. And then we've always looked at identity needs, which I've talked about, the need for self-worth, the need for identity, meaning belonging, the need for recognition, all these really personal identity needs. They're fundamental to why we know that individuals become involved in extremism. So another key concept is that of disillusionment. And disillusionment is the concept that is most often cited as being why people de-radicalize. In particular, there's a recent study by Dalgard Nielsen, and she states from her research of, I think it was 216 samples, everything available between 2009 and now, that individuals leave extremism behind because of doubts in three areas. Doubts around ideology, doubts around group leadership and group, and doubts as a result of personal and practical issues. So HRI deals with these in a number of ways, these two concepts, and has a number of modules that looks at personal group identity, group conflict, self-image, managing threats, seeking political change, and moving on. HRI is not an ideologically focused program. We don't deal with ideology, and we do not seek to change people's beliefs or their ideology per se, but the program does give people space to reflect on their own commitments, their own beliefs, their own values. So where are we now? 280 ERGs have been completed to date. 90 of our offenders have completed the health identity intervention. Just for interest, 172 individuals are actively being monitored at being at risk of becoming radicalized in our prison service. There is still limited extremism-specific interventions, as I've said, with which to compare HRI. We do have anecdotal feedback that it is transformational, but it's only anecdotal. I'm currently doing my doctorate, and this top of my doctorate is on evaluating the health identity intervention. So we have four studies, really. One is we're going to do thematic analysis of all our post-intervention reports. Another is I'm particularly going to look at intelligence, so data collection, pre and post, because unfortunately we can't rely on recidivism data for this type of offending. And the other two studies are looking at the ERGs, our pre-ERGs, the pre-HRI ERGs, and our post-HRI ERGs, because ERGs are done periodically, so we will look at them before and after the program to see if there's changes in risk and need. So that's really the basis of the studies that we're doing around HRI. So just a quick then talk about developing dialogues. So this is a toolkit that we developed with the National Probation Service. It facilitates, it's basically a set of structured discussions that you can use with individuals who are at risk of becoming engaged in extremism. It is not an intervention as such, but it encourages individuals to question their interest in engagement and to reduce what might potentially be problematic commitments, and that is balanced with an exploration of individual strengths to build resilience within them against any further radicalisation. We also have other offender behaviour programs, so where we have individuals who have taken the criminal pathway into extremism, something that might facilitate their de-radicalisation or their desistance or disengagement, a violence reduction programs, or if relevant, thinking skills programs. And we also have a program called Identity Matters, which deals with gang involvement, which might be relevant for some individuals. And then finally, just to say that we have a desistance and disengagement program. This is a new program, and the Home Office is doing it in conjunction with ourselves. And basically, it is added resources so that we can provide more interventions to individuals to facilitate their desistance and their disengagement. And four areas of support in which they provide resources are around mentoring, theological input, family support, and practical and personal support. And my last little slide, which I did yesterday very quickly in the back of the room, is really just to show you briefly the processes by which we deal with radicalisation within the criminal justice system. So intelligence information is brought to the notice of prison or probation staff. From there, that information is assessed using the ERS, extremism risk screening. If relevant, police also inform that information. And from there, either if we have significant concerns, we would look to do the ERG. Otherwise, we have a number of interventions or management actions that we can use with individuals. In terms of management actions, this might be something like an adjudication process, it might be a transfer from a wing or a transfer from a prison to another prison, or segregation in some cases. We also have interventions, and this is, for example, the Desistance and Disengagement Program, developing dialogues, one-to-one psychology work, one-to-one MR work, or signposting to other services. Or as a result of ERG, we might need to do HII, or we might need to do theological or archaeological intervention, or we might look to do